Hey everyone, thank you so much for taking time to listen to this week's sermon. It's our hope that this resource will grow you in your faith, hope, and love for Jesus. Please help us get the word out by following us on social media and sharing resources just like this. And if today's message has compelled you to take a next step in faith, please let us know by commenting on this post, sending us a personal message, or contacting us at the church office. Praying and believing that God will change you in a powerful way through his word. Blessings.
Well, in 1992, one of the most important trials in U.S. history was in full swing. Marine Lance Corporal Harold Dawson and Private First Class Loudon Downey were accused of the murder of Private William Santiago. Now, as the trial progressed, it was made evidently clear that although Dawson and Downey were guilty, what was significant in this case is that they were operating under the order of their commanding officer, an order that they had to obey. So in the most dramatic moment in the entire trial, the JAG lawyer, Daniel Caffey, actually puts the commanding officer, Colonel Nathan Jessup, on the stand. And what happens next has lived in courtroom history. Caffey immediately goes after the colonel, asking him, did you order the code red? The judge says, you don't have to answer that, Colonel. Now, this colonel, he wasn't going to let this young lawyer show him up. So he responded back, you want answers? To which Caffey got louder, I think I'm entitled to them. To which Jessup once again says, you want answers? And Caffey screams at the colonel, says, I want the truth. And in the quiet courtroom, Jessup famously from the bowels of his soul screams out, you can't handle the truth. Now, if you're not with me yet, I have a picture from the trial. We're going to put the picture up here on the screen. If you're still not with me yet, that is Tom Cruise and that is Jack Nicholson. This is from the 1992 movie, A Few Good Men. But the point still holds true. Jack Nicholson was right. We can't handle the truth. It's because the truth hurts. The truth confronts our reality, it disrupts our beliefs, and it forces us to change. And over the centuries, many men have said some pretty profound things about truth. Sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed. There are two ways to be fooled. One is to believe what isn't true. The other is to refuse to believe what is, because all truths pass through three steps. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepted as self-evident, which leads to what I believe is the most sobering fact, and that's this: the truth always collects. The truth always collects, which is why for most of us, when faced with uncomfortable truth, the kind of truth that disrupts our beliefs and forces us to move, it is just easier to change how you believe instead of changing how you behave. Just way easier to change how you believe instead of actually changing how you behave. Because people will do anything, no matter how absurd it is, to avoid the truth. So that's why the season is so perfect right now. We are in a season where everywhere you look, what do you see? Costumes. Everywhere. Now listen, I love a good costume. Like for that moment, regardless of how short it is, you get to be somebody else. You can hide who you are. Now, last Sunday night, y'all showed up for Trunk or Treat, right? And like, it was a great night. We had over 200 families. We got to bless a Trunk or Treat, and the stations were great. I can't show them all, but I got the highlights here. So look, we're going to look at some of these pictures here. So here's our first picture for a station. This is a real popular group. This was the Pickle Group. They were a pretty big deal. See what I did there? It got wild at the end. Like, kids were just running around eating pickles. It was weird. It was like, what are you doing? the pickle table. Hey, Toy Story, you got a friend in Jesus. Always nice when us Christians can take things and make it, spin it to a Jesus twist. You can make anything about Jesus. That was pretty awesome. And then, you know, this was a nice station. We had the farm animals with the farm backdrop. We got a lot of pumpkins that showed up, which was great. Even had a mad scientist doing some experiments. It was a great night. Listen, you won't believe this. Even the Pope showed up. Unbelievable. Big night in St. Mary's, but the scariest station of all had to have been this one. I don't know what was happening in that station, but that guy was scared. Unbelievable. It was a pretty good night. I think if we're honest, we all like wearing costumes. And I'm not talking about the ones on the outside. I'm talking about the costumes that hide what's happening in our hearts and our minds. The costumes we wear so people don't have to really know what's going on. And if you don't think this is true, let's just talk about some costumes. Have you ever laughed at something someone said, even though it wasn't funny at all? Maybe even offensive, but you still laugh. Like, that's a costume. And have you ever acted like you knew what somebody was talking about, even though you had no clue what they were saying because you didn't want to look awkward? That's a costume. How about this one? Have you ever pretended like you were okay, even though on the inside you were falling apart because you just didn't want to have to talk about it? That's a costume. Now, I've worn a couple costumes over my years. In college, I fell into a very strange costume. And I didn't know how I got there, but at some point in one of my college classes, there was a woman who sat behind me, and she thought my name was Steve. Now, this is significant because that is not my name. My name is Adam. And at some moment, she started calling me Steve, and for whatever reason, I started responding. And now we're in a relationship, because every day she would come to class, she would call me by my name, Steve, and I would respond. And it would get so weird. Like, I would do everything to ignore this woman. I would sit on a different side of the room, but there was something about my personality, and she wanted to be near me. And I remember she'd sit beside me, and she'd go, "Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve." And I'd go, "Yes." The look on her face on the last day of college when my teacher hands out the final grades and he calls us by name to come up to grab the paper, when my teacher says, "Adam," and I come up and I grab the paper, and as I turn around, the look on her face, and she goes, "I thought your name was Steve." I said, "Well, some people call me Steve." You? Like, that's just wild. But here's the thing. Truth will always be truth, right? Regardless of understanding, disbelief, or ignorance, the truth will always collect. And I think we got to be careful, because if we look at truth through this lens, it can almost make truth feel like a prison, causing us to feel trapped in our inability to really be free. But isn't that why we wear costumes? Because we don't really want people to know who we are. And so when we look at the scriptures, we see a completely different approach to truth. Not one that looks to suppress us, but one that looks to actually set us free. And as you read the gospels, what you're going to find is several expressions of truth play out. And one of my favorites happens in John 18, where Jesus is standing before Pilate. He is on trial. And Pilate and Jesus have this conversation. Pilate goes to Jesus and he says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" he asked him. And Jesus replied, "Is this your question, or did others tell you about me?" "Am I a Jew?" Pilate retorted. "Your own people and their leading priests brought you to me for trial. Why? What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not an earthly kingdom. If it were, my followers would fight to keep me from being handed over to the Jewish leaders. But my kingdom is not of this world." Pilate says, "So you are a king?" Jesus responded, "You say I am a king." And here's what he says. "Actually, I was born and came into this world to testify to the truth. All who love the truth recognize that what I say is true." And then Pilate says this, "What is truth?" then what is truth? Now, 10 verses before this, or 10 chapters before this, Jesus is going to start to unpack a little bit of what he's talking about here in John 8 when he says this. He says, "If you are truly my disciples, if you remain faithful to my teachings, and you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And then in John 14, he starts to open up even more about what this means. And what he says in John 14, that's going to be where we're going to be hanging out for the rest of our time together. Because in John 14, Jesus says this very famous statement. He says, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me." And all these things that Jesus is speaking about right now are about to collide in one powerful moment. So back to Mark 5 that we read at the top of the message. In Mark 5, while Jesus is teaching in Galilee, there is this man who interrupts the story. Now, this man's name is Jairus. Now, what we know about Jairus is that he is a synagogue ruler, which means he has political and social influence. As a synagogue ruler, he has been given the authority to interpret and teach the Torah. Jairus has what very few Jews will ever experience in their life: power. And you know what? None of that means anything right now, because Jairus is also a father. And his child is dying. And in this moment, he is laying at the feet of Jesus, and he is pleading for Jesus to save the life of his girl. Now, you need to understand the significance of this moment, because for a man like Jairus to just talk about Jesus would invite judgment and ridicule from his peers. But for a man like Jairus to actually approach Jesus and ask Jesus for a miracle, that puts Jairus in a position where he could be outcast from his position and from his friends. And what we know to be true with the text is that Jairus is not the only person who is looking for Jesus in this moment. As a matter of fact, in this crowd that is now starting to grow, there is a woman, and she is hiding. Now, we know from the text that this woman has been dealing with a medical condition that has been causing her to bleed for 12 years of her life. And she has spent every dollar she has to try to get healed and has nothing. Her condition has left her broke, in pain, and completely isolated. Now, at best, this woman is going to spend the rest of her life alone, poor and hurting. That is best case scenario for her. But worst case scenario is right now in this moment against this crowd of people, if she is exposed, if people understand what's happening inside of her, Jewish law will look at her and men like Jairus will say, "You are unclean and you are unfit to be in society and we are casting you out." And despite the fact that Jairus is over here, and the woman is right here, and their lives are completely different in every way possible, today they are experiencing something that connects all of us: desperation. Desperation does not care about your income, your social status, or your belief system. All desperation cares about is finding a way. And these two people desperately need a way. These two people desperately need something in their life to change. And that's the thing about change. We love to talk about it and celebrate it. But very few of us are actually willing to do what it takes to see it happen. Here's how change works. Until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, nothing is ever going to happen in your life. I'm going to say that again. Until the pain of staying the same is greater than the pain of change, nothing is ever going to happen in your life. One of the most heartbreaking things for me as a pastor is when I do life with people, I'll come across people every single day who are going through heavy, desperate times. But what blows my mind is regardless of how bad it is, regardless of what they're going through, they're not desperate enough to change. And in my history, I have found that if you're not desperate enough for change, you're probably not desperate enough for God. It's as if these costumes we wear are somehow sufficient to sustain us. And so we just keep wearing the costumes. We just keep acting like everything's fine. And you know, one of the best places to wear a costume is in this room right here, where I can show up on Sunday and I can smile and I can fake it through worship and I can act like everything in my life is okay. But the moment I get to my car in the parking lot, the reality of the brokenness that I'm in is there. And despite the fact that it's going to take me being desperate enough to change, I'm not desperate enough to do something about it. And what's great about God is that sometimes God will love us enough to allow us to experience deep desperation, the kind of desperation that doesn't look like look at Jesus and go, well, that is a way to changing my life. The kind of desperation that looks at Jesus and realizes the truth, he is the only way I can change my life. And when you read the text, although Jairus gets to Jesus first, it's the woman's faith that actually stops Jesus. So they're in the midst of this incredible moment. Jairus' daughter is dying in any moment. They are rushing to try to get to his house. There is a crowd of people, hundreds and hundreds of people that they are trying to press through. Everybody is touching Jesus, and this woman knows she can't. She can't talk to him, let alone dare to touch him. But she doesn't have to touch Jesus. She's got the deep enough faith that says, if I can just reach out and I can touch his robe, I can be healed by his power. And so this woman, I imagine her crawling through the crowd, trying not to be seen, trying not to be known, reaches out in a moment of what? Desperation. And she grabs a hold of the robe of Jesus and she clings to it, believing this can heal me. And in that moment, she's healed. 12 years is gone, and Jesus stops, and he says, somebody touched me. Now, to which the disciples react to the way that I would react. What are you talking about? Who touched you? I think the better question is, who's not touching you? Like, this is a little crazy right now, Jesus. Like, we got to get going. Jairus' daughter is dying. Why are we stopping? And Jesus says, no. Somebody touched me. I felt power leave my body. Now, what's interesting is this woman, check this, she doesn't have to do anything. She's got her miracle. She can sneak out the back of the crowd. She can go unseen and unnoticed. But that's not what she does. She confesses. And I always wondered reading this as a kid, why would she confess? To confess in this moment would be to expose yourself. To confess in this moment would be to be completely vulnerable. To confess, it's to take the costume off. It's to step out of the lies. It's to step into the truth. And as I got older, I realized it. She speaks out because she has to. She has to speak out. Let me tell you why confession matters. Confession matters because what you can't say out loud owns you. What you can't say out loud owns you. And I wonder for how many of us that's our story. That we've been through some things. Seen it, felt it. And everything inside of us is desperate for something to change. But I don't know, Adam, if I can change, because to be honest with you, I can't even say out loud what I'm going through. At its heart, confession is a declaration of truth against lies. Confession is a declaration of truth against lies. So Jesus stops. He says, who touched me? And a hand reaches out from the crowd. Me. I did it. I touched you. And what Mark tells us is that she begins to share her story with Jesus. She begins to share the fact that 12 years of her life was nothing but pain, loss, brokenness, and darkness. And in one desperate moment of faith, gone. Gone. It didn't own her anymore. I realized that when I got older. The reason why she can say it out loud is because who she was is not who she is right now. The thing that owned her doesn't own her anymore. That her truth is now Jesus. That is her truth. And if confession is a declaration of truth, then the question you and I got to ask ourselves this morning is, what is Jesus offering us today? What is truth? What's the truth that Jesus gives? And it's simply this. The truth that Jesus offers you and he offers me is life. Real life. And some of the most beautiful words you'll ever read in the world, Paul says this, that if you openly declare that Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is by believing in your heart that you are made right with God. And it is by openly declaring your faith that you are saved. And I love this line. For what? Not just a couple people. Not just for those who've got their life figured out before they come to me. Not those who are really good at reading through the Bible, really good at church attendance, really good at checking the moral boxes. No. He says what? He says everyone. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. That's the life that Jesus is offering. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And it's this, that God in eternity would look at you and he would look at me, knowing that we were going to make a mess of our life, and he would say this, I want you in my family. I will pay the highest price to get you to be in my family. Now, why would God do that? He does it because he loves us. Like, we've got this weird thing with God where we think that somehow God can't see past our costumes. We do this weird thing where we think that somehow God doesn't know all the brokenness that's in your life, and that maybe if he did know, if for some way God, maybe God knew all the ways you would mess your life up, as if he'd have buyer's remorse and he would regret saving you on the cross. Listen, God knows that you're messy. God knows that you're going to live your life and you are going to stumble, you are going to fall, and you are going to get dirty. That's the point of the cross. The point of the cross is to show us just how much God loves us. What he was willing to do to set us free. That's the point of the cross. And I think, what is worse than hiding in shame? Because there is something worse than hiding in shame. What is worse than hiding in shame is not walking in the freedom that Christ gave you. That's what's worse. Not hiding in the shame, but saying, I'm going to not choose to walk in this life-giving, beautiful gift that God has given me. And Paul, in Galatians, he pleads with us. He says, at last, we have freedom, for Christ has set us free. We must always cherish this truth and firmly refuse to go back into the bondage of our past, that we have freedom through Christ. And today, it is my desire to plead with you, to cherish this truth, this reality that there is a God in heaven that loves you and that he is offering you life, not just life eternal, but check this, life now. Right here, and that through the power of Jesus Christ, that not only can you cherish this truth, but that you can refuse to go back to the bondage of your past, refuse to go back to that lie. And how many of us, that's been our story, that God has showed up, he saved us, and he's brought us out of the dirt, only for us to fall back into it again. And I think if we're not careful, when you do that one too many times, you get the enemy stuck inside your head, and you say, you think God's going to save you again? He's going to have that conversation again. And I'm here to tell you that the evidence of the New Testament and the evidence of anybody you're ever going to come across to that has been broken and has been saved by the grace of Jesus Christ is he'll do it again and again and again and again. He'll keep showing up. He'll keep loving you. He'll keep saving you. He'll never stop saving you because that's the power of the cross. But you got to want it. You got to want that in your life. Let me tell you something about your faith. You can't rent it. You can't borrow it. You can't lease it. It can't be your parents' faith, your grandparents' faith. It can't be your friends' faith. It can't be your pastor's faith. It's got to be your faith. You got to own it. You got to want it. And one of the best statements I've ever heard about repentance, which is changing your life, is this. Repentance doesn't happen when you're sorry. It happens when you change. And what I'm here to tell you is that through the cross of Jesus Christ and through the empty tomb, you and I have the ability to change where we didn't have that before. Now, listen, I got four kids. I'm sorry is just daily verbiage in the Myers household. Whether they're saying I'm sorry, most of the time I'm saying I'm sorry. There's a lot of I'm sorry's in the Myers house. But you know what doesn't happen as fast as I want it to do? Change. And that's all right. Because you know what? I love my kids. And I know that me at 41 have lived a different life than they have at 7, 11, 14, and 19. And the fact that they're not there yet doesn't stop me from loving them, being patient with them, caring about them. And even though the human side of me says, man, I want that change to happen faster, I know we're getting there. Repentance does not happen when we're just sorry, but it happens when we change. It happens when we actually believe the words of Jesus, that he is the way, the truth, and the life, that if you believe in him, you will be set free. It's allowing the grace and mercy of Jesus to save us and change us, because check this, the cross reminds us that we can't. But that empty tomb, 3 days later, that tells us that through Jesus, we sure can. I love the old hymn. I grew up a church kid. Because he lives, I can face tomorrow. Because he lives, what? All fear is gone. I know he holds the future. Life is worth the living just because he lives. The real offer on the table today, friends, is life. It has to be. Because if Jesus cannot give us life, then Jesus is not the way, and Jesus is not the truth. And it's in this moment that we almost forget about Jairus. We probably would have if it wouldn't be for the fact that one of his servants brings word from home, and here's what he says. Your daughter's dead. You're too late. Too late. I wonder for how many of us today have those two words crushed us in more ways than we'd like to admit. For how many of us today have those two words crushed our faith one too many times? Too late. Too late to hope. Too late to pray. Too late to believe. Too late. As if what has happened to you or what has not happened for you is outside the power of the cross and the empty tomb. And in this moment, there's a lot that our boy Jairus can say right now. And I don't know about you, but I think he's justified. I'm like, wait a second. I got to you first. My daughter is dying. I think death trumps physical healing every day of the week. I am a synagogue ruler. He could have had a list of reasons why he could be upset, and I think he'd be justified in every single one of them. Do you notice that Jairus doesn't say a word? But Jesus does. In this horrible moment, Jesus speaks the only two words that destroys the lies, the only two words that push back fear. Jesus looks at Jairus in the face and he says, what? Just believe. Not in the chaos that's around you, not in the uncertainty inside of you, not in the fear that is crippling you right now. Believe in me, Jairus, for I am the way. I am the truth. And I'm about to show you, Jairus, that I am the life, even if it takes 12 years. It's significant, isn't it, when you read this? that the year this woman's condition began is the same year that Jairus' daughter was born. 12 years. And there's a little Bible nerd in me that's a little excited to think that potentially the day that that baby girl took her first breath might have been the day that that woman's condition started. And who would have known that this day in Mark 5 was set in motion 12 years ago? That 12 years later to this moment, this woman would receive the miracle that she had waited so long for, and our guy Jairus would receive the miracle that he didn't know he needed. But God knew. Listen, church family, I need you to hear this. The future is not just something that our God knows about. The future is a place that our God exists. He has to. And so I just want to take a couple minutes here, and I want to share a little bit about my story. I've been here for 2 years, and it's impossible to share it all, but I want to share a little bit about where I was from. So my wife and I, we got married really young, 19 and 20, and she came from a family of six. I came from a family of two. So when it came time to build a family, we said, hey, let's meet in the middle. Let's have four kids, as if you can somehow control that. And so we get our first baby pretty quick. It's Amelia, and it's amazing, and it's beautiful, and like we're ready for this journey. But as some of you all will understand, is that journey didn't go the way we thought. And we were about 6-7 weeks into our second pregnancy, and then my wife miscarried, which is devastating. And something that is so common that maybe we don't talk about enough. And so we thought, hey, we're going to still believe God for this dream of a big family. So we get pregnant again, and we're 5 months into this pregnancy, and we go to the doctor, and we're in the ultrasound room, and they said, hey, there's just some things that are popping up on this ultrasound that we're just not sure of. So we're going to send you to Charleston. We go to Charleston, and we sit down with the doctors, and they said, there's no easy way to tell you this, but your little girl has this laundry list of medical conditions, and she's not going to live a month. What do you do with that? Well, we prayed. We prayed that God would do a miracle. We prayed that God would do what the doctor said couldn't be done, and a month turned into 6 weeks, turned into 8 weeks, and there was this glimmer of hope that maybe something could happen, and then we lost our daughter. So we said, hey, let's just keep believing. Let's just keep trusting for God. And so we get pregnant again. We're 5 months into the pregnancy, and the same thing happened again. And it's those moments in your life where everything just starts to fall apart. And so I'm upstairs in the small room of our house, and I'm praying. It's 2 a.m. because I can't sleep, and I'm angry. And I got my Bible in my hands. I'm like, God, I don't understand any of this right now. And in my frustration, I throw my Bible onto the ground and I just fall. Like it's the end of my rope. And I felt like Jesus speaking to my heart, and he said, hey, am I enough? Am I enough? If you had never have another kid in your life, am I enough? If these other things that are happening in your life don't work itself out, if all you get is me, am I enough? I said, yeah. God, you are. What if Jesus doesn't heal the woman? What if he doesn't raise Jairus' daughter back from the dead? Is he still God? Is he still enough? Church, Jesus is not a way. He's not a way to a better life. He's not a way to a house full of kids. He's not a way to a better job. He's not a way to better health. He's not a way to better circumstances. Jesus is the way. That no matter what happens in my life, if I have Jesus, I'm going to be okay. That's the truth. And that truth leads to life. A couple years later, we had gotten a phone call from the Women's Care Center. And they knew of our history, and they said, hey, we got this mom who's having a baby in a week. There is no promises here, and we know your history, but would you take this kid? So we said, you know what? We're going to do what we've always done. We're going to love this kid until Jesus says otherwise. And so a day before Easter, my son, he's sitting right here in the front row. He was born. And that night we were in the hospital and my wife is holding this baby and I've got my arms around her. And in that moment, I felt God grab a hold of my heart and he said, Adam, I've been waiting in this moment for you for the last 5 years. I never left you. I was always here. I just needed you to get to me. Well, then I was at work one day and Elise called me crying. Worst way to get a phone call. She says, we're pregnant. The doctor said, don't get pregnant. We don't know what's going on, but y'all can't have babies. So we sat that night in our living room and we said, we've prayed for God to do the impossible. And he said, yes. And we've prayed for God to do the possible. He said, no. And you know, at the end of the day, he's still God. He's the way, not our way. So we're going to trust him as long as he allows us to have this kid. 9 months later, my 11-year-old daughter was born. And then we said, well, let's open up our home and let's just be foster parents and let's just try to love on some kids that don't have parents because we were parents that didn't have kids. And so they called us and said, hey, we know you just wanted babies, but we got this kid. She's a year and a half old. It's going to be 6 months. Tops. Okay. 2 years later, my youngest daughter, Faith, was adopted into our home. We lost 3 kids in our story. And through God's grace, he gave us 3 kids back. Now listen, I know that's not everybody's story. But the point of what I'm trying to say is that the future is not some place that God knows about. It's the future that he's at. Whatever that future is, friend, he's on the other side waiting for you. And he's in the midst of it right now with you. He has never left you. And that is the truth that gives us life. If I had time today, I could tell you of all the prayers I prayed that didn't get answered. People in my life that I've loved that have died to cancer, things in my life that have gone away, things that have happened that have changed me in ways I wish they never would have had. But in 41 years, I can stand in front of you as a brother in Christ and say this: he is the way. No matter what happens, if we have Jesus, we're going to be okay. Jack was right. We can't handle the truth, but Jesus can. He can handle all of it. Even when the truth doesn't work in my favor, even when the truth doesn't work out for my benefit, at the end of the day, if Jesus is in my life, I'm going to be okay. So with that, we're going to close out the service. We're going to do something a little different this morning. So I'm going to invite you just to close your eyes with me and bow your head. If you're new here, I promise nothing weird's going to happen. We're not going to take your stuff while you're not looking, okay? It's a safe place. I'm asking you to do that because if you're like me, your week has probably been crazy, and this might be the first moment of peace you've had to talk to the God of the universe. And so when we close our eyes, we kind of shut the world out. We just focus on the King. If you're here today, and the truth of where your life is right now, it's not where it needs to be. And you know change needs to happen. I want to invite you, like Jairus, to lay it at the feet of Jesus. Like this woman, to reach out in faith and trust that if God could do it for them, he could do it for me. That God, I'm going to pray those big prayers and I'm going to ask you to fill the house with kids. I'm going to ask you to heal my body and I'm going to ask you to do the miracle. But Jesus, what I really want is not for you to be a way. I need you to be the way. So if that's you today, I'd invite you to pray this with me, that you would say, Jesus, I need to change. I'm asking right now that you would grab a hold of my life and you would help me to trust you. You are the way. You are the truth. Give me life. And with our heads bowed, I just want to take a moment that maybe if you're here today and you don't have a relationship with Jesus, Paul's words that says, if we believe in our hearts and declare with our mouth that Jesus is Lord, you will be saved. And maybe you're here today and you say, listen, man, forget changing my life. I don't even have a relationship with Jesus. And if that's you today, I would love to pray with you. I'd love to do this over a cup of coffee, but we don't got that this morning. But we do have this, that you and I could pray this together, that if that's you, and if you would say, I would want to ask Jesus into my life, I recognize that I am a sinner, and I am broken, and I am lost. But Adam, I believe what you're saying, that this Jesus who lived and died and rose again, I believe he could save my life. If that's you, I'd invite you to pray this with me, that you would say, Jesus, I know that I am a sinner, and I am lost. But I believe you lived a perfect life. I believe you paid for my sin on that cross. And I believe you walked out of that grave. I accept you in my life. My life is yours. God, we thank you so much for this morning. God, thank you so much for those in this room. It's my hope and desire, God, is that today that there would be some encouragement, that people would feel your love and your presence, that they would know that, God, that you are not done with them, that, God, that our stories are still being written, and that, Jesus, that we would be bold enough in our life to confess and say the things out loud so that they would stop owning us and that we would trust you as people who have been following you, as believers in this room. Maybe we've been believers for a year or believers our whole lives, that you would be our way. You would be our truth, our life. And for those this morning that maybe today for the first time asked you in their life and said, God, save me, save my soul, change my life, that God, that they would feel your spirit wrap your arms around them, and they would know that they are changed forever. God, we thank you for your love and mercy. We thank you for your grace. And we ask that you would help us to walk in your truth, the truth that sets us free. And we say this, Jesus, in your name, amen.
Thank you so much for taking time to listen to this week's sermon. It's our hope that this resource will grow you in your faith, hope, and love for Jesus. Please help us get the word out by following us on social media and sharing resources just like this. And if today's message has compelled you to take a next step in faith, please let us know by commenting on this post, sending us a direct message, or contacting us at the church office. We are praying and believing that God will change you in a powerful way this week through his word. Blessings.